All right, Berto, this is part two in our very lengthy and tangent-filled discussion about the new Black Mirror episode, right. Joan is Awful. So let's get back to it. What do you say?
Let's do it.
This is the Psychology in Seattle podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kirkana. I'm a therapist and a professor.
My name is Humberto Castañeda, and I mean, you know what I do. So
that's true. All right, let's get back into it. When you watched Joan is Awful, because I feel like with Black Mirror, it produces some kind of a feeling, mm-hmm. like anxiety or concern about the future or self-reflection. You know, it's designed to do that. It's the Black Mirror.
Right.
It's supposed to make you look at your life or your society. So when you were watching it or when it concluded, how did it make you feel on the inside?
Okay, let me think. When it ended, I felt some amount of fear. And the amount of fear I felt was related to that, how not so far from possibilities this could be. In fact, I was just lamenting this to our friend Mitch. I was telling him how there's so many videos now of celebrities, fake videos of celebrities. Like, have you seen all the ones that Arnold in all the old movies? Like, they put Arnold in old movies.
Yeah, but I've seen that
and
sort of stuff.
Of course, this is not with his permission. He gets no money from this, whatever. And now, is Arnold someone who needs a lot of help in life? No, of course not. But that's not the point. I feel like, but where's the authority over one's body, image, voice, right. all these things? So I see this and I'm like, oh God, oh God, oh God. And just like the horror of, imagine if in reality someone could just usurp your life and your stories and all your things, put them out there for everyone to look at, laugh, gawk, whatever, and you have no say over it.
Right.
So that was horrifying.
Yeah, I mean, that's already happening, right?
Yeah.
And I guess another thought that I had was, okay, at some point, presumably, you know, like when revenge porn first came out.
Yeah.
There weren't laws that addressed that specifically. So people were doing all these really horrible, immoral, eventually criminal things. But now it's against the law, from my understanding.
Yeah.
And thus you don't see it anymore, or at least it's not out there for the common usage.
Right.
But, and right now we're at a stage. And so I presume in 10 years, there will be laws. I figure there will be. Like, someone will be harmed.
Yeah.
Like, you know, a soccer mom is depicted in, you know, maybe not even porn. Let's just say that someone that doesn't like her or her teenage kid or something makes a video, a long video, not just a short one, but like a 20-minute video of her walking down the street and taking a dump on someone's lawn or something.
Yeah.
And it blows up on the internet and she gets harmed by it. People get concerned. Because, you know, you could demonstrate and you could bring psychologists into the courtroom to say, even though by the next day or the next week, everyone who thought that was the soccer mom that did that was informed otherwise, the damage is done because that for that week that the community thought it was her, it's noticeable because we have these other studies that demonstrate once that's in the person's head, it's sort of like when you wake up in the morning and you had a dream about someone that you knew.
That's right.
Like your spouse, a negative dream.
Yeah.
Even though you now know it was a dream, you feel a little different about your spouse.
This happens to me all the time and it's horrible, right? I wake up angry, like, I can't believe you did that or whatever. And you know, 100%, you know, it's like, it's just a dream.
Yeah.
But your brain was fully convinced.
Yeah.
So,
and once that memory's in there,
you can't just erase it.
No, you can't
erase it. The brain doesn't work that way.
And it'll affect behavior moving forward. So, you know, you could demonstrate that even though, or you could even potentially demonstrate that even if you're told up front it's fake, it could actually alter the way you would behave for something. Anyway, so presumably, you know, there'll be a law about it. But on the other hand, it doesn't stop an individual just doing it in their home.
That's right.
And maybe showing it to a few friends or just watching it on their own. Because eventually this technology you'll just be on your computer. It'll be this tiny little section of your computer. And so someone could say, like, I just want Umberto and Kirk to be having sex.
Right. Great.
And they could just make it for themselves.
That's right.
And you're like, well, it's only one person, but it's just like, well, I don't care if it's one person. You know, you can imagine it in your head.
Yeah.
Let's all just take a second. Imagine Kirk and Umberto having sex.
Oh my God. Why are you putting these ideas in people's...
So listener, I just want you to think about...
Just really think.
No. You already thought about it. I know you did. Listener, I want you to think about, okay,
frame
why
by frame.
Why did you engineer our bodies in that way?
Yeah.
And I'm not going to shame you.
I don't like it.
But it says something about you that you put me there and Birdo there.
Yeah, that's weird.
In that position.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just saying, it says more about you than it does about us.
I also feel a little dizzy from it, frankly.
You would feel dizzy, believe me. You mess with the bull, you get the horns.
Ouch.
Yeah. So I had the exact same feeling right. You did. As I'm watching it, I'm like, well, you know, and it's done for comedy and
right.
and it's outlandish and cartoonish.
But
as it was wrapping up, I was like, well, and it was a similar feeling. Don't Look Up. I'm watching it. I'm like,
oh my gosh, that one really felt.
This is just so it's so cartoonish, but and that's more consequential.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course.
I felt nauseous at the end. I was like, oh God.
Yeah. It's like, well. And that's what Black Mirror is for.
Yeah.
And that's what it did to me was, you know, watching Jonas Awful, I'm like.
And
it's funny to think about it happening to other people, but
right.
It could be us.
Yeah. It could be people you. So there are many things I appreciated. Like, I love meta stories and things where they, you know, subvert. Like, one thing I was thinking as it was playing, when it first started, I was waiting for, like, the tech angle. You know, I'm like, oh. What's going on? Where's the tech angle? And then when it landed, I'm like, oh, right. As soon as they sat on the couch, they said, let's watch something. I'm like, oh, I kind of knew. I'm like, they're going to do some computer generated thing, right? And then when they show her, I'm like, oh, they're like generating her life. So I kind of knew. But then I thought that was the end of the subterfuge. I don't know why I didn't think that they could pull a Matrix on us. Like, okay, this isn't based reality.
Oh, interesting.
I didn't see that one coming.
So I did, which I don't usually,
yeah.
And you and usually do.
And I think it's because I was expecting them to go, like I said, the other way, which was that this was some sort of plot to make people realize how horrible they normally are. When they got to Michael Cera, it actually took me a moment. I'm like, wait, what's that? Oh, huh. Oh, of course. Yeah.
Because usually I don't usually see them. And two, I think it's because if I'm really engrossed in a story, I don't actually want to pull myself out. I want to just go along for the ride.
Yeah. You don't want to spend all your time thinking.
Well, I don't want to ruin it.
Yeah.
I want to stay in the story.
Sure.
But for some reason, Black Mirror, I guess, makes you do that.
Well, so I'm going through that and I'm really enjoying it. And by the way, Salma Hayek was funny. Like, it was all great. Very good acting and stuff. But then also that feeling of like, oh. Because not all Black Mirror episodes do that to me. Some of them are interesting thought experiments, mm-hmm. but a little too off for me to like really be worried.
Mm-hmm.
But some, definitely. And this one, definitely.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh.
And it's prescient of Charlie Brooker because he couldn't have known that AI would have just been massively talked about in our society. Like he couldn't have known that. Because if this episode came out a year ago, it would have with me. And I know more than the average person does about future tech.
Yeah.
You obviously know a lot more about this topic. But if you showed me this episode a year ago, I would have been like, huh, well, you know, that'll never happen in my lifetime. You show it to me today,
yeah.
I'm like, it's kind of happening now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
well, I wonder how long ago they filmed it. I mean, it must have been after.
They develop these things years in advance. There's no way that they started working on it last month.
Yeah.
Like the contracts and the famous people and
right.
The locations.
I guess the trends were already there. So, yeah, they are always working on trends that are very futuristic.
But they couldn't have known that this topic would have blown up
explode significantly. So much.
Yeah, I don't think anyone predicted, because, you know, AI, as you know, has been chugging along for decades. How could you know that in the...
The inflection point was a little surprising.
Yeah. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, but ChatGPT, before ChatGPT, there were other versions.
Oh, of course.
There were other outfits they were doing.
First of all, in the fall, even before GPT-4, that was already GPT-3.5.
Yeah.
And that's not the first large language model.
Right. So why... ChatGPT, why?
It really was, they crossed a boundary of size of the model and the complexity of the model to the point where it became more than just a novelty, where it was like,
it got better.
Wait a minute.
Like, it actually got better.
Yeah, because you went from like the very previous version being like, wow, that's pretty cool. That's a pretty cool trick. To, wait, what do you mean it just passed the bar exam?
But
what do you mean, like, you could fully...
It must be that kind of stuff, because if someone had shown me the ability... Because to me, what made ChatGPT explode was literally everyone could try it out themselves.
Right.
I'm assuming you could have tried it out last year.
Well, you could have tried other things last year for sure.
But
there's been chatbots for decades.
Right. You know? So what was it? So it must have been that it crossed a line into newsworthiness. Because if someone told me, because no, if anyone would have told me last year, look, there's a kind of good chat that GPT, you know, whatever, yeah. ChatGPT-2, that you can kind of fiddle around with. I would have fiddled around with it for a second, but no one said anything to me because it wasn't in the news, because it wasn't passing the bar exam.
But look, the second shoe's about to drop here soon. We've had Siri, hey, I won't say it,
yeah,
Google,
yeah,
because otherwise it'll trigger everyone's
things. And Annie Murphy's character on right. Schitt's Creek is also named after one of the things, right?
Oh, right. Yeah. And they have Alexa, all these things, right? We've had these for years, and we are all familiar with them. We can say some commands to it, all these things. But we're like only a couple releases away from having full human conversations with these things using the equivalent of ChatGPT, but first listening to the voice, changing it to the what the text is, then changing it back. But that's possible. It just hasn't been fully packaged nicely.
Would it be a true personal assistant where it would have like administrative access to your calendar and stuff? And
yes, but even putting the assistant part to the side for a second,
just conversation.
Just think about the conversation.
Yeah.
That you can literally sit there being like, I mean, what did you think
about
Moby
Dick? How are you doing?
How are you doing? And it will be like, and this isn't sci-fi. This is, you can do this right this second.
Right. And it'll inflect like, because, you know,
exactly.
The way that Siri talks, right? It's very compute.
And you can do it with famous people's voices. And all, these.
Right.
All of this, by the way, is right now. You just got to go download the right models. But we are like a couple of
consumer,
releases away from consumer-grade
version is very soon. Yeah.
So that's another shoe that's going to drop because, but yet, we've had these things for years.
Yeah. So along those lines, Berto, there's a possibility, one, that people would be able to pirate our voices so that they could talk to us.
That's right.
Or, and this just occurred to me, we could sell it.
Yeah.
Or make it ourselves free, available to someone, you know, but then maybe we could have some control over it. You know, like it.
Let's just make an app. And then with this app, you can talk to us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then
it's the official licensed one.
You can add in filters like, well, don't say these. Don't let them go down these roads.
Right. And there's Easter eggs. Like if you do say certain things, we will go down those.
You will get the bull.
The bull
and you will get the horns.
Yes.
Yeah. So, okay. Let's take another break, Berto. When we get back, let's actually talk about what the moral of the story is. What do you say?
Let's do it.
All right, we're back from the break. Let's do an OPP. What do you say?
OPP.
These people became patrons all the way back in 2020 and have stayed patrons
through
thick and thin. We have Valerie from Bern, CH. What do you think? Oh, isn't that? No, it's Switzerland.
Sorry, right.
I think it's Switzerland.
Right.
Bern, Switzerland.
Right, Switzerland, yes.
I've learned. I've adapted. Marianne from France. Emily from Great Britain.
Nice.
Brighton. Fatima or Fatima from Chicago. Because I've heard both. I knew a
Fatima.
I knew a Fatima.
Oh, really?
And I knew a Fatima.
Anyway, okay.
Veronica from Columbia, Missouri.
Ah.
August from Dearborn, Michigan. Flory from the Netherlands. Emery's from Dublin, Ohio.
A Dublin in Ohio?
Denise from Duncan, British Columbia. Zachary from Everett, Washington.
Wow.
Good old Everett. Emily from California. Leslie from Maryland. Maria from Helsinki, Finland.
Oh.
Allison from Ivanhoe, Australia. Leva from Latvia, I'm going to guess. LT.
Sounds like Latvia.
Thank you for being a patron and staying a patron through thick and thin.
Woo!
Seemed like a lot of international folks in that group. It's like, I wonder, because sometimes it has to do with content that I make that will motivate people to become
a patron. Pandemic, right?
It was.
Yeah.
But just that section of time, I wonder if there was something about, did I talk about Finland or?
I don't know.
So, Berto, what's the moral of the story? Of Joan is awful.
Well, I think that from one angle, it is a thinking of like, hey, listen, you may think that being the protagonist of your story means something, but that might backfire. It might not be what you wanted. And yet you can be the protagonist of your story if you kind of take more a well-grounded ownership and you're careful with others and you're and you're empathetic and things like that. I kind of saw that one. But I also see a sort of like a different angle on it, which was, it was a little darker actually, which was your life, basically you are not a good person. You're not a good person. And so if you were the protagonist of your story, everyone would hate you. It's a dark thing. But that's, they were showing this person that seems very normal and yet immediately comes off as a villain.
Well, yeah. And barring the possibility that the real Joan wasn't even bad at all, and the right. Annie Murphy Joan
was
a little worse. Yeah. And so, you know, but one of the things depicted in the show that is a relatable experience is, what if your spouse were to literally hear the conversations you're having about them behind their back when you're maybe a little upset?
Or friends or coworkers or bosses or whatever.
Yeah. Literally everyone.
Then you're a horrible person. You're one of those villains.
Right. And what does that say? Does that mean that's a bad thing, that you shouldn't be saying those things? Or you should be wording it differently? Or what? What do you think?
Yeah. Well, so obviously I don't actually agree with the premise that, and I don't think that's necessarily their intention. The idea is, as I could read it, is like, look, we took this woman. Yeah, once you see that that's not even based reality, fair enough, they might be exaggerating. But even if you don't do that, what were the worst things that this person was doing? One, they were having second thoughts about their relationship, and they had a misadventure with someone that they used to have a relationship with. Okay, that's not fair to their partner, but this happens day in, day out to people. Two, they had to fire someone. They could have shown more empathy, right? Like, but it's tough. It's tough to fire. Okay. Number three, was there a number three? Like, right? Like, this person is actually very normal, very run of the mill, and they made mistakes. Okay. But as soon as it was highlighted to other people, they become a villain. And this, to me, is akin to the online experience we have already, which is, look, we put an episode out. You say one thing slightly off to some people, and all of a sudden you're a villain. I say something, I'm a villain. We are villains instantly. And even just like if you're a little off a mark, right? Let alone if someone could actually see your whole day, your whole reality, and everything you say and everyone you talk to. Can you imagine the villainy? So that, from my perspective, is like real. But does that mean that we need to all, like that we are really all villains? Well, no. That is part of the human condition.
Well, what about specifically talking about your spouse behind your back?
Specific one. Yeah, no, I don't think that's fair. It's not fair to have someone listen to what you said about them. Yeah, okay, so this is interesting because on the one hand, if you're saying really horrible things about your partner, your friend, your whatever, behind their back, well, that's not healthy. That's not healthy. It's probably something that would be bad anyways. But there is also this fine line between the right to privacy, right? And so if you're saying things about someone to someone else, and then that's being spied upon without your knowledge, consent,
well,
that's also invading your privacy.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let me give a scenario. Let's say that you, Birdo, are talking about your wife, and you don't expect her to be home.
Right.
And so you're talking with someone on the phone, and let's say, if you're with someone long enough, as you've been with your wife, there's probably two or three things.
Well, I'd be saying like, well, I expect her to wear exactly what I need her to wear at all times. And like,
seriously, we all have a set of things that annoy us about our partner.
Yeah.
That when we are particularly annoyed by it, or maybe even just day to day, if our partner weren't around, we might word it in a plain manner.
Right.
Okay. So you're on the phone and you're complaining about your wife about one of those things, and it's not a deal breaker to you,
right?
But it is annoying, and you're kind of venting, right?
Yeah, I'm venting.
Your wife comes home and overhears it.
Right.
It's not an invasion of her privacy, but it was a mistake of scheduling or whatever. She overhears it, and she's devastated by it. And for a month, she's upset. She's talking like, why are you even with me? Whatever.
Yeah.
What went wrong? Obviously, she didn't do anything wrong, but what went wrong there?
I mean, it's hard. That's a hard thing to say if something went wrong, because I would be the same thing. Like, if I came home and I heard her saying something really mean, I'd be devastated too. And I wasn't spying. And maybe what they were saying was fair. They were talking to a friend. And
but is it normal, even within a healthy, loving marriage relationship, to have those kinds of annoyances that you might, maybe even in a healthy manner, need to vent about now?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's probably right. I mean, I guess when I think about my specific case, I don't know, she's probably venting right as we speak. But in my case, like, I am more of an open book, so I probably everything that I would say about her to someone, I've already told her, for better or for worse. But that said, it doesn't mean I might word it differently, or I might emphasize it more, or And it's true. It's an unfortunate situation if that were to happen.
Yeah, I think the simplistic way to look at what happened in the movie or the TV show is that she was suffering, or she has issues, or she wasn't very reflective, or she was a little awful when she's talking about her boyfriend and she's like, yeah, he's just so bland, and when he gives me his food, I have to act like I like it, but it's also bland. And who knows, if we could sit her down and ask her, how do you really feel about your boyfriend, it's possible that if she would give the full story, and she'd say, like, well, you know, and she's being honest, she's like, well, I love him and I want to be with him, but sometimes he's a little boring. He doesn't want to do anything exciting. And I don't know, maybe it's my fault too, but because, you know, the food thing, that's just a minor example. The main thing is just like, he's just always trying to please me, or he just doesn't have any goals in life.
And it's clear that she hasn't given him any of this feedback, by the way.
Right.
Right. Because for example,
but how could you, right? I mean, how could you say to your partner?
Well, but I think that's part of the, I don't even know if that's part of the intended message, but as those scenes were playing out, I certainly was thinking, geez, this is why you got to communicate.
Yeah.
Because if you have to pretend every day that you're loving the cuisine.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Yeah. I think there's some obvious examples of just like, hey, you know, you could absolutely just be upfront and say like, hey, to be honest, you know, don't say your cooking is bland, but what you just gave me, it's not the most exciting thing I've eaten. You know, I don't want to hurt your feelings. Most people would rather hear that than a lie.
Yeah.
So in fact, it should be mentioned that at least from the previews of that new Julia Louis-Dreyfus movie, which is getting really good ratings, I think is based on this happening where her husband overhears her talking.
Oh, interesting.
Her talking about him.
Okay.
Anyway.
That sounds like an interesting premise.
What I'll say about this is that it is a similar phenomenon is the thoughts we have. You know, we're not talking with anyone else. We're thinking a thought.
Well, that's even worse.
So we might, in our minds, during a fight, say some pretty awful things about our partner. And we don't say them out loud, hopefully, because we differentiate enough in the moment to know that, well, I know I don't really feel this way, and it's not a good idea. And if this thought persists, you know, like, I want to divorce this person right now. I never want to see this person's face for the rest of my life. And if you could read someone's mind, that would be devastating.
Well,
and
absolutely.
So essentially what's happening, the mechanism, is if your wife were to overhear you, she would blow it out of proportion, because to you, it's a complaint, and everything you're saying is honest, right? Because you're talking to a friend. But it doesn't represent the full picture.
Right.
So on one hand, I live in this world so much that I don't know, but if I overheard Stacy talking shit about me behind my back, which honestly, I don't think she does. She's like one of the rare people who doesn't do that.
She's told me a few things you would not want to hear.
And so but if I did at this stage of my life, which I wouldn't have been when I was younger,
right,
I think it would hurt.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't generalize it, and I would go, well, I've already kind of trained my brain to understand that that's not the topic sentence. That's like, you know, page 10 where the first 9 pages are positive, neutral things. And of course, there's going to be some negative things in there. And I can see her point, because I am annoying in that way. You know what I mean?
There's also a gradient. Like, if someone comes home and the thing they overhear is like, I have never loved this person. I've been living a lie. I'm hiding a nuke in their closet. It's like, okay, well, I mean, that's escalated.
Yeah. And, you know, call the feds. There's a nuke in the closet.
Well, that's the least of the problems.
Right, exactly. But I'm talking about healthy, exactly, normal complaints that one might have about your partner. And, you know, another version of this is that I've worked with couples in therapy is they will read the spouse's journal.
Oh.
That's happened a lot.
Yikes.
Or they'll somehow come across the email or something and
read it. That's invasive.
And well, for some people, they have it so that, you know, if you want to read my journal, go ahead. But
sure, just, that's the understanding.
But
okay.
Just know that you're going to read some stuff in there that might disturb you. And so I've had long conversations with people about that, you know, the damage and about this nuance of, well, that's aversion. That's the person venting. Have you never... You know, the person who's hurt, I would ask them, have you ever had thoughts that were, you know, pretty harsh temporarily towards your partner? You know, it's that. It's not, you know, there's a temptation to believe that that's the real story and only what you're getting is the fake version of the person. And that could be very concerning, right? So I think, you know, it lends itself to, I think what you were getting at earlier is to be a little bit more honest about things so that if they do overhear you, you'd be like, well, this shouldn't surprise you that I'm still talking about this, but the intensity of which I was talking about I guess I was being kind of a dick in the moment to you, you know, but you shouldn't be surprised that I'm complaining about that because I've told you that I don't like that you do that sort of thing. You know?
I mean, an exaggerated version of this is imagine you come home and your daughter or son is on their phone with their friend. They're like, I hate my dad. Right? And that's the thing that they're saying because yesterday they got grounded or whatever.
Right?
That can happen easily.
Yeah,
that certainly is a slice of time that you should not over-index, right? And similarly, if someone's like, "Oh my gosh, it's driving me nuts. Keep coming home. The shoes that the same use he uses to press down on the marshmallows are stuck all over the walls, and he keeps doing it." Well, you know, if it's the first
what?
Oh, you don't do this? Okay, fine. I'll use another example. No, but the point is, like, you come home.
Sometimes
you hear
you're good at improv, and other times. The ChatGPT just breaks down.
But you know, the basic idea is if you hear a slice of time of someone complaining, that's not the entirety of your relationship.
Right. Yeah. So I wrote down a bunch of points that the show might be trying to make or does make. One, capitalists will exploit people. I think that's part of the message. Yep. Government doesn't do enough to protect people. People have been giving up their privacy too much.
That was a clear message. Like, why didn't you read the fine print?
Yeah. Capitalists manipulate the masses with negative content. That was another point made. And this happens today.
Yeah, totally.
Like, when, I mean, not only with capitalists, so to speak, but people post a lot of stuff on the internet. And my little slice of the world that I pay attention to is on Reddit. And Reddit gets upvoted by the masses. There's no, I mean, there's probably an algorithm on some level with Reddit, but they don't really need one because all they have to do is wait for comments and upvotes to feed it onto my front page, you know? And so for the things that rise to the top are often the things that are the most anger-inducing in people. You know, for example, the whole Karen thing, right? Which I'm not a fan of that word, but the videos of middle-aged women who are saying, let me talk to the manager or something close to that. And the assumption and the desire from the audience to want to hate someone. You know, like I was talking earlier about the I am the main character. I guess, have been around the sun enough times to know that you can't just look at a video clip and understand what's happening.
Yeah.
That there's a good chance that there's a context there. You just can't know. It looks a certain way, but you just can't know what happened there. And so when people see this, they assume that the person that they're watching is awful because that's what they want for psychological reasons, you know, blah, blah, blah. Instead of, and that's what also rises to the top of the algorithm.
Of course.
There's probably countless videos of people just doing regular things, asking for the manager under normal circumstances.
That's boring.
It doesn't get watched. It's not engaging, you know?
That's what, like, if in this show, the scenes had been, you know, the show starts, she's like, hi, I need to talk to you. And she's like very empathetic. I'm like, oh my gosh, here, I'm so sorry. Have this.
Firing the person, yeah.
And then later, she gets a text from her ex and she's like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm in a committed relationship. And then she gets home and she's like, okay, so listen, I happen to have taste, I like stuff with more like spice, maybe.
I'm already asleep.
You're asleep.
Yeah, right. So the computer doesn't care in which way the algorithm goes, it just knows what causes people to watch and it knew. So that's another phenomenon that I think it was commenting on directly. Also, deep fakes are coming, as we were talking about. Also, we might be in a simulation.
As we speak.
Also, AI writing actually is becoming a problem in our society today. You know, writers...
Absolutely.
Writers are already having a problem with streaming because of the way in which the industry works now. They get paid a lot less because the shows are shorter and the sort of thing, and there's more of them. And so they want to unionize so they can actually make a living out of being a writer. And so...
100%.
An additional problem is that now, and particularly in the future, a corporation like Netflix might not even need writers. They could just have an AI.
It's already happening. Like, they're already generating plots.
Yeah.
They're auto-generating plots, then picking them. Then I just was having a conversation with a highly, highly frustrated teacher who was grading papers. Because, you know, the school year is over, right? Or it's ending for many school districts. And this phenomena is happening, which I'm sure is happening everywhere, where it's like, these people turn their papers at the very last second, and they're not known to write great papers. These papers are way better written than I would expect.
Yeah.
What do I do?
Yeah.
And it's happening.
Right. And it's not like in the past. I think now they do have programs that can try to take a guess as to whether or not it's AI generated, but there's no way to know because every iteration of a question or even the way the AI is operating that day will pump something out that's different. Plus, it's not long from now where you can literally, you will subscribe to an AI bot that literally is designed to evade any detection. You would say, write this at my level, which isn't that good. Right. So it would sprinkle in little problems, you know? And so
what would be so ironic is, like, as a student who doesn't want to write your essays, to train your algorithm well to fake it, you have to write like 100 essays. So it's like, here, try to onboard, write 100 essays about all the following topics.
Yeah.
And the student's like,
yeah, but you know, all you'd have to do is feed it the last 10 papers that you wrote, the actual
papers.
But
you didn't write them. You gave it ChatGPT.
But yeah, I mean, I suppose that's the thing, right? Like, so, let me ask you, what do you think will happen? And also, what do you think about the people that say, well, they said this about calculators when it first came out?
And it did hurt people's ability to calculate, that's for sure. But it hasn't stopped society, for sure. I think there's a couple things that come to mind. One, something I certainly didn't understand, I'm pretty sure most kids don't understand because it's just not explained to us. The idea was, you thought that you're going to school to get a grade. That was the whole thing. It's like, I got to get a grade. I got to get like this A. And then why? Oh, because I got to get A's because then that's how I graduate. And then I got to go to college to get A's because then that's how I get a job to make money, to buy the house that I want to buy, right? Mm-hmm. The car I want to buy. Okay. But what's never explained is like, listen, you're a little baby human who will have a baby brain if you don't train it. So forget the money for a second. Forget the A's. We just need to train your little baby brain. And that's not a concept that we get.
Yeah.
Because the whole reason for learning to write the essay isn't so that you can get an A. It's so that your little baby brain can develop.
Yeah.
Same thing with the calculators.
Well, you know what 99% of baby or kids will say to you? But I don't care. I want to play video games.
Exactly.
And if I can, in 3 seconds, write an essay that'll pass, right, I'd rather do that.
And that's why I'm thinking that it actually kind of will take a structural change where there can't be an A. That there can't be a grade given to you by something you did in the privacy of your house. Because that's the wrong incentive.
That could have been faked.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that there's a possibility, and maybe there's already movements in this direction, that there won't be essays, there will be prompts, and then you just have to speak. You just have to, off the top of your head.
Or write in class, like handwrite in class.
Right. And the papers won't be as good because you won't have as much time, for example, but a different set of skills and maybe more fundamental skills.
Right.
You know?
Now, there's a different philosophy or perspective on this, which is, and you were alluding to the calculator, it's not a bad metaphor at all because, for example, do you know how to use a slide rule?
No.
A calculus slide rule? Neither do I. I actually never learned
how to use a slide rule. But you could argue the slide rule, when it came on the scene, was annoying people because they weren't doing...
Actually, that's true. But certainly that's a skill that none of us ever learned, well, of our generation, had to learn, and certainly we don't know. So another way to think about it would be, well, but if our brain is freed from some things that it used to have to learn to do, are there other things that I can do?
So that's the point. Like with calculators, at first, especially people who didn't come up with calculators, are like, this is going to ruin society. It's also going to ruin mathematics and engineering. It could be argued it enhanced it because it freed up engineers and other people using math to do other things that were beyond the brute force calculations that they would have to do. And obviously, computers allow you to do computations you could never do on your own. So calculators actually help, you know. And in this weird way, and I'd never thought about it just now, say you have a high schooler who manages, given the, or even if you say, I don't even care if you use AI. I just want a paper that is persuasive on these points. And, you know, you can't just type that into an AI bot and have it spit out to be like the best, especially if you're competing against other students that have the same chatbot. So you'd have to do a little massaging, but, you know, not bad. And then you submit it and you get an A. Then you go to college, same thing. Then you go to the workplace. Well, does the workplace care if you're using, you know, does the customer care if you're using an AI chatbot to write a website copy or an advertisement for a commercial? Like, no, they don't care. So it's not cheating if in the end the tool be used effectively in the same way that an engineer on the job at the age 35 will use a calculator.
Yeah, I guess a lot more jobs might go back to being manual things that the robots will also replace, but not yet. Like, we have bought ourselves a little window of time where manual jobs are more valuable because that you can't fake yet as easily. I also was thinking that if you could also try to solve this via technology itself. For example, if I have a computer with a camera, a microphone, a keyboard and stuff that actually is using artificial intelligence to detect whether or not you're doing the right thing, right? And now it makes us a little bit of slaves to the tech, but hey, if it's in the to train your brain, your little baby brain.
Yeah, I could totally see that. In 5 years, there would be an app that...
The computer issued lab, because the computers are issued by the school.
School, right. And it's very secure and robust, and it keeps track of everything you type on that computer while filming you. And, you know, all the disclosures and everything.
The other angle, of course, the teachers can take is like, look, you can do whatever you want, and kind of put it more on the parents. Look, you can do whatever you want, but there's going to be a final. Two things. If your final's not good, and if your final doesn't match the work, double down.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And the final's in person, you're going to have to write it, you know, blah,
yeah. Blah. I mean, I kind of had a version of that in high school in my French class.
Yeah.
So in my senior year, in relation to what I was talking about earlier, I hate being bored and I hate things that I feel like I'm wasting my time.
Yeah.
And my senior year in high school, I absolutely felt I was wasting my time because I was already accepted into UW.
Oh, yeah.
University of Washington, or I, my index, you know, my tests and my grades were so high, I mathematically figured out, I mean, they weren't high, but they were high enough such that I figured out that if I basically flunked all my classes my senior year, as long as I graduated, as long as I got a diploma, I still would have gotten into the University of Washington. So I said, it's illogical for me to do my homework. Now, I loved calculus, I loved physics, I loved chemistry, so I actually forewent those classes.
Okay.
But I hated English, and I hated...
That's similar to me, man.
You know, other kinds of classes like that. So I completely just stopped working in those classes. And my English teacher that year was new, and so only knew me as basically some sort
slacker.
Of... Yeah, and someone who wasn't, I guess, accomplished academically. And she was at graduation. And, you know, when you have a certain grade level, you wear a sash that indicates you had a 3.85 higher. And I came around the corner and she looked at me and then she saw the sash and I actually felt remorse.
Oh no.
Because the calculation I thought she was making in her head was, I didn't care about her class.
Oh.
Do you know what I mean?
Like, she could have taken it personally.
Right. I felt instantly bad. I'm like, oh, no. It's not you.
It's a Curb Your Enthusiasm moment. No, the sash isn't. It's not.
I'm actually really dumb. I stole this or something. And, I felt, because, you know, I remember, I guess, thinking that she was kind of an underdog, new, struggling.
Yeah.
I felt like, because... Anyway, point is
she quit teaching after that.
I don't know. And so my senior year, I sat next to a girl named, I think her name was Noelle, and she loved French, but she hated math.
Okay.
I love math. I hated French.
We exchanged
homework. So I did her homework.
I thought you meant you were going to tutor each other.
No, I just did it. I just did the work. Oh my God. And she did all my French homework. So... I, you know, was passing by the end of the quarter, and then my very last thing that I did in high school, you know, just before the bell rang and everyone graduated, was this like 3-hour French final, and it's passed around the classroom, and the instructions are in French.
Oh my God!
I am so insufficient with French. I don't understand even the gist what these questions are asking me to do.
Right.
And I mean, when I say I don't understand, like I couldn't, in my wildest dreams, I wouldn't even begin to fake an answer. Right. There was just no way. So I sat there kind of like freaking out, looking at all the prompts, and I was just like, well, if I get an F, it doesn't matter because and by that point I knew I was already going to the University of Washington. And so I just sat there for 3 hours like doodling.
Oh my gosh. Well, the teacher was probably so confused. Like, but you did well on the homework.
Yeah. Earlier this week, you answered a question that was, you know, pretty good. How come you didn't? Exactly. So yeah, you could do that as a teacher. You could be like, hey, look, parents, if you let your kids get away with that,
do whatever, but
then
here's the deal.
Just know that half of their grade will be determined by an in-person exam at the end of the year. Yeah, absolutely. You could do that.
Oh my gosh.
Well, actually, let's just take a break here for a second. We get back. Let's continue. What do you say?
Let's do it.
So, Berto, if you were a demotivational speaker, how would you convince everyone to become a patron of the podcast listening right now?
All right. I want to talk to you about a huge opportunity that you've already missed and you're never going to find again. And that opportunity was called a great successful life. But you're here now, so why not make the best of it? What does it mean to make the best of it? Well, you can't. But you can actually donate to a thing that will help you understand why donating to this thing is still something you can do. That's the Psychology in Seattle podcast. Donate now. Become a patron because you have no other choices, really.
You know how earlier we were talking about definition of the self?
Yes.
And how current times and what occupies your thinking will affect the way we see the self and other people's selves?
Yeah.
Since AI is such a thing on the brain, I literally, as you were doing that, I was thinking, oh my God, Berto's like almost as good as a chatbot. Because you could enter the exact same question into an AI, and it would produce something. Yeah. I've had that happen.
I'm almost as good as a chat.
I was like, oh my God, you're like a chatbot. You're like
almost
really
as good as a chat.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I could see students using AI though as a tool of like, okay, here's the assignment. They type it in and they get an example, and at least they have like, oh, that's what a paragraph looks like.
That's
what an argument looks like. Those are some good points.
So people are using AI to learn all sorts of things actively. And that, the flip side of this is I think any kid, any student not actively learning how to basically maximize everything AI can do is going to be working back from the back, because like you have to become, this is the new learning how to program kind of thing. Like the new thing you have to learn, how to, you know, it used to be like learn how to use Microsoft Word or learn how to use a browser. This is the new thing.
Well, so what will be the common skills in the workplace, in the home that this will do?
I don't know what is, it might get a little out of hand, but for the next few years, any field you're trying to go into, if you're someone who, like, imagine you're working at a company and it's like, okay, we need to create some brochures for the thing. Mm-hmm. You're like, okay, well, I'll go hire. Like, you're done. You're fired. Because in 3 minutes, you could probably produce the brochures we need if you know how to use the tools.
Or you'll get a good lay of the land
exactly.
by using the AI, and then you can absolutely use that as a basis or something.
And then as we speak, the things are getting way more complex because there's all these efforts to link AIs together and then automate things so that essentially it's not just that I can create a little paragraph or a little image, it's that I can create an app or I can create a whole workflow.
Yeah, it's interesting. So someone, a listener to the podcast, Jocelyn, she reached out to me because she, I believe, is in school learning how to do web design and needed a project to work on. And she knew that our website wasn't that great, which it isn't, and that she could design a website. So there's a whole process of like talking to the customers and talking with me. You know, it was a whole program and very involved, way more involved than I thought it would be, way more work for her than I thought it would be. And so she's been doing that for a long time, and she actually did a mock-up, and it was just mind-blowing how good it was.
Right.
And one of the things that that I have a dream about but never thought was possible until now with the possibility of AI, I think there's something on the order of 4,000 episodes if you include all the reaction videos that I've made. And people email me all the time. Did you talk about this topic or I have a question about this topic? And I'm like, I'm pretty sure we did a lengthy side tangent about that.
Yeah.
Or I think we did an episode on that. I don't know. And so it would be really useful if I had the ability to answer that question right away, or an AI had the ability to answer that question right away. So also categorizing the episodes by like topic, right? Because we go in a lot of directions. So to manually do that would take years.
Yeah.
You have to listen to every episode. You got to code everything, da-da-da. So anyway, the design actually had that as a feature that might be included of like, you just press a keyword like parenting and it pulls up all the episodes that that go into parenting. But we don't really have that data because I didn't keep track of that kind of thing. Well, then another person that we're hiring, actually another fan of the show, Abigail, is a professional in this area. And so we were talking with her about implementing this design.
Right.
And in the moment, I'm just like, well, AI, I know enough that an AI could listen to every episode in 10 seconds or however long it takes to process that. And at the very least, suggest keywords.
Yeah.
And then could maybe learn, oh, okay, these are the keywords that you're wanting me to look for. And then could actually, the AI could actually pull a paragraph and say, I'm labeling this paragraph as one of several paragraphs in which Kirk talked about parenting. Is that right? And it would be really quick because I would be able to glance at it and be like, yep, that's parenting. I wouldn't code that as parenting. And then lickety split, maybe in 4 hours of human work, it would be able to not only give keywords for every episode that you would be able to search for, but also like start to pull quotes, and then the AI, the user would be able to be like, okay, pull, 7 paragraphs from different episode in which Kirk talked about borderline, and you'd be able to see this array of paragraphs, right? And how fucking amazing that would be just for myself, just to know what I've talked about. And sometimes it's helpful for me to listen to my own past episodes because it happened, I recorded it 10 years ago and I've forgotten 90% of what I knew at the time. And so, so I'm talking with the computer person, Abigail, and she looked into it and she's like, yeah, we're like halfway there in terms of consumer grade, and there's some coding that I can do to maybe kind of do some of that. But I feel like very soon, the Abigails of the world wouldn't even have to do a lot of grunt coding. You would just sign up for a thing and, pay $50 or a subscription, and it would just do all that shit for you, right?
Absolutely, 100%.
So how soon? Because I don't want to have to put, because at this point, in terms of what the dream is for the website to sort of catalog all this stuff, it's going to take me and Stacy probably months of labor, honestly, to kind of, even with AI helping. And, similar to when Napster and Kazaa came out and MP3s, and I started to, MP3s. And so I had all these records. So I manually recorded my records on digitizing them and had to record each song.
Right.
And there would be these little scratches, with the needle drop and stuff. And so for a couple years, half of my MP3s that I'd be listening to on my MP3 player
were from records.
Were from records that I had because I didn't want to steal them from the internet. And plus, some songs weren't on Kazaa or Napster. Fast forward a little bit later, and you have things like Spotify and YouTube where every song's available.
Right.
So I can't tell you how much fucking time I spent. Imagine, I had hundreds of, maybe thousands of records. I don't know if I digitized all of them, but a lot of them.
Yeah.
I had to sit, and that's real time. you have to listen to the song real time and just sit there.
Yeah.
And so
Even in a very small version of that. I remember going through and grabbing CDs to turn them into MP3s. Even just that was so time consuming.
Right.
And that's way simpler than what you're describing.
Well, yeah. When you're ripping a CD, it's a lot faster, but you still have to potentially
archive it all, put it on folders. Usually you don't get the metadata back then by default. You have to label it.
Yeah. So I don't want to do that again.
You never have to do that again. Yeah.
So when do you think I, Kirk, will be able to, even for a fee, get an AI to listen to every episode and, at the very least, pull keywords?
So here's the thing that can be done now. You can have one AI transcribe every episode to text. The error rate for that is probably not as good as like the ChatGPT part, but
side note on that. So another fan of the podcast, Samuel, actually reached out to me last month saying that he's a tech guy and he loves the podcast and he wants to help. And he's like, yeah, anything I can do. And I was like, well, I don't think there's much. It's really nice of you. And so, you know, we brainstormed a little bit and he was like, well, how about transcripts? And I was like, okay. And he's like, AI can code that, or there's a way to use all that. And so we went back and forth and he really dove into it a lot. And he did manage to have one of the best, if not the best, transcripts I've ever seen. Because, you know, I have the ability, you know, text-to-speech that exists right now. And I've seen transcripts before, but it's real bad and the punctuation is terrible.
Right.
And this version from Samuel was near perfect, honestly, in terms of the grammar and the interpretation of my words and that. And so we're already there, but that's pretty far from what I'm saying right now.
No, but because once you have it all in text, that's the step one.
Yeah.
The next thing is you feed that into a Llama or an equivalent model, which is a large language model.
So is that something you would pay for?
No.
Oh.
It's like maybe $20 at most. Like, you feed all this into a Llama model.
So I could take 10 transcripts.
No, all of it. Okay. You take your entire videos, all of them transcribed.
Yeah.
You feed all of it into a large language model like Llama.
Uh-huh.
Now Llama has
and is it like a private area of the server that's just private to you?
It's on your PC. It's on your desktop.
Oh, it's on your desktop.
Yeah. You need a burly enough computer, but you know, we can sort of pull
it. So it's not you like uploading it to like Wikipedia or something.
No.
It's
no.
Like it's
now there's services you can do that too, but you could do this all on your computer or a computer or a collection of small computers, whatever. But the point is you download the thing, you put it all into Llama. So now Llama's got your entire speech that you've given over 10, 13 years. Okay, 15 years. Now, that thing, because it's a large language model, you can talk about everything you've said and it pulls back from that content pretty reliably.
I could ask, what is the definition of borderline persona disorder? Yeah. And it will pull the definition from my words?
Yes. Now, asterisk. Remember, these large language models can sometimes get things wrong.
Yeah.
Right. So there's got to be a little bit counterbalance.
With Llama, is there feedback to refine the algorithm at all?
Or? No, Llama is just like an open source version of ChatGPT, basically. Mm. But it's nearly as powerful. So you do all this. So now we have two things. First of all, you have it all in text. Second, you have a large language model that can converse with us freely about all your stuff that we've ever said. The next step is there's another AI that you can now start grabbing, like indexing all of it, right? And not only indexing
what's
the text.
That, what's that AI?
I don't know the names, but these are all AIs that are freely available.
So different type of AI. Yeah.
And they're all available through things like Hugging Face, which is a service that's got hundreds of models that we can use. And even better. Well, anyways, I'm digressing. So then you can not only inventory all the text, but you can also then tie it back to the videos and like time code within the videos. And like eventually, this is where this will probably require more little bit. But then you can pull the little snippets. Right, so you can be like, hey, what did Kirk say about blah? And it's like, I think that blah, 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 right?
So how long from now do you think it'll be before with, say, 2 full days of me futzing with all this, I will get all that I want?
I mean, if you had the right people working on this right now, you could have this in 10 minutes. Like, I mean, I just mean like you could have this today.
What do you mean the right people? Where are those right people?
A couple, like one or two engineers that are actively working with these models and know how
and
they
have
work
access
and what
to the models.
Everyone's got, they're open source. You don't have to pay, they're open source models. Meaning,
so
Yeah.
If you have an engineer that's in the know, that is you could contract with, they would use these open source models and be able to do all the things that I've been saying.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to even go further, I haven't gone through these steps. We can try it together. We can technically use ChatGPT to ask it how we go about using these models. But then now we can do even better than that, because now there's a few automated models.
You can ask itself how to use itself?
Yeah, basically. There's new automated models that we can use where what we say is, we basically describe the problem that we're describing, and it will subtask other AIs with the pieces of the problem we're trying to solve.
Not code something that you have to run, but actually just
basically
do it.
If you and I set aside some time, I think we can get pretty far with this.
Yeah.
We just literally need to, and we could do it remotely. Like, we could do the thing where we log into a video call and then I'm like doing stuff and then we're both looking at it. I think we can get pretty far, because like everything you've described, like the models are there for the usage.
Right. That's what I was thinking. But it's just not super consumer friendly at this point.
What doesn't exist yet is a website.
I can just go to a website and...
Where you do everything we just said, and then everything else is behind the scenes.
And I just click on a few buttons and say, I want this option and that option.
Like,
but
here's
not that
the link to my repository.
Yeah.
Here is in sentences. Like, actually, I speak into a mic. What I want, I was really thinking, blah, blah, blah. And you give it like 10 minutes description of what you want. That doesn't yet exist. But right. The pieces exist. And so right now, that's why it requires a little bit.
So how long do you think it'll be before that happens?
Dude, like, the companies are working on it. It's just...
Because I feel like the business applications for this are astronomical.
So
I mean,
Microsoft,
not only for something like what I want to do, for every podcast, honestly, but if you're a library, run a library, and you're looking for some way to organize all the data, if you're someone who works with a database, just any old database, like... You sell shoes for Nike and you're just looking for trends within the market, not only just with your data with Nike, but you want all the trends and you want the machine learning to kind of figure out what your next move should be. Like, well, your next shoe should be red, you know, and you're like, huh, why? Well, because this, you know, huh. Or for me, like, what's the next reality TV show I should watch? Or, you know, like the money-making opportunities, of course.
Absolutely.
And I can't even comprehend what is possible. So I'm just like, I figure those capitalists will make that happen so that I can ride in the coattails of them.
Yeah, yeah.
So the podcast can be more convenient for the listeners. That's what I want. I want them to be able to go, you know, just type in a question and it'll be our own private database for a you know, an AI. The AI would... have a private database that you could go into through the public AI that was calling upon the private psychology shell database, and they would be able to be directed directly to the audio, maybe even played the audio file right then and there.
Well, so again, two things. One, so Microsoft, Amazon, a lot of companies right now are working on enterprise versions of this, where you use their service, you pay them for their service, and you give them access to your enterprise data, and their intelligent AI helps you do stuff like what you're describing. Now, there's the next level of that, which is, imagine I say, this goes back to what we were talking about earlier. I could say, I want Kirk to talk to me about the following topic.
Mm-hmm.
And then, through a combination of maybe actual literal snippets that you had, plus just fill in the gaps, you get that, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a little bit more, but...
Yeah, deep fake me giving advice to them particularly,
But still based largely on what you've said.
Right, so I, at first, of course it sounds like dystopia, but I would actually... consider that. Absolutely. I would have to test it out.
And you'd have to have all sorts of disclaimers and say, look,
this isn't me. You know, and if it goes wonky, you know, understand that, you know, I'm just trying to think myself as a consumer. Would I want Conan O'Brien to make a joke about me? Yes. Would I pay $20?
Think of Cameo.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Exactly. That's exactly what I was thinking of. Like, would I pay $20 to have Conan O'Brien riff and make fun of me, you know, and
for maybe, your anniversary, for your thing, whatever it is.
Yeah, right. For exactly. or sing happy birthday.
Yeah.
And, you know, Conan O'Brien is authorizing this, right?
Yeah.
That would be the thing.
Right.
And I would, I would pay $20 for
exactly.
that. Exactly. Especially, imagine this. I'm on the Conan O'Brien show.
Exactly.
As a guest.
Yeah.
And I get to watch it.
Right.
But it's just AI generating it. Oh my God, Birdo.
I know.
Oh my God.
It's happening.
So deepfake.
We're there.
But like authorized and government regulated.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like there's it can't get out of control.
And this is where my stomach starts to churn again.
Well, you need young people in Congress is a thing. You can't have those old folks who don't understand Wi-Fi. I mean, those people asking, those senators asking those questions. Like,
so the problem we're facing is right now the young people are on the open source networks across the world downloading these models and iterating at light speed on them. So the stuff, everything we can imagine and more is coming without any regulation. Meanwhile, the young people are non-existent in Congress that are at least, you know, really facing these problems and trying to deal
with them. Well, the thing that I am hopeful and somewhat optimistic about is, you know, for those who don't know, because it seems like the internet, it's natural. It sort of is what it is because that's the way the internet is. The internet is partially the way it is because of people that innovated it. But it's also part of the way that it is because government took action to steer it in a particular direction.
Yeah.
There was a time, and I was pretty sure this was going to happen, I think in the teens, maybe it was the aughts, you would probably know the exact sort of year when Congress was considering making it like the FCC.
Yes.
There would be the same rules and regulations, like a utility, right? It would be regulated heavily, right? And there was or that every website would be liable for anything that is posted on, you know, there's various different versions of this. And generally speaking, of course, there's some wrong moves, but generally speaking, the United States government has made very human, consumer benefiting, I believe, decisions. Because they could have pretty easily said, look, anything that's posted on Facebook or Twitter, if it is found to harm someone, then Facebook will get sued.
Right.
Because it's Facebook's site. Or another question that was posed to them was, what about the children? Because, you know, originally with television and radio, anyone could broadcast anything.
Right.
But eventually the FCC kicked in and said, no.
Wait a minute.
Not only can you not just say anything, and we're going to make sure that you keep it non-vulgar or whatever, but also only authorized, licensed individuals can broadcast on this frequency.
Right.
So I and you cannot just make a TV station and start broadcasting from our house because it'll interfere with the signaling of a... There was a time when they were considering...
It looks like that was what was going
to
happen.
They were considering doing that to the fucking internet.
Right. So you and I wouldn't have been able to create a website.
We wouldn't have a podcast. Right. It would have shut down everything we understand to know about the internet. But the government didn't do it.
Right.
Because we, the people, spoke up. And and tech-minded people spoke up and said, please, government, do not do this. It could ruin things. And they didn't do it. So I wonder, with this, that they might make a similar choice.
But, and there are still some limits, which is why, unfortunately, the dark web exists, because the normal internet does have limitations.
Thoughtful limits.
Yeah.
Thoughtful, you know, citizen-based limits that protect us. That regulations are important. I'm not an anti-regulationist. I am a pro-regulationist.
Yeah.
But when it comes to this, you know, I just want to go on the Conan show and have him sing happy birthday to me. It's a free country. I deserve it.
Yes.
Well, that does it for that episode of Psychology in Seattle. Everyone out there, please take care of yourself because
it's a free country and you deserve it.